This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good colleague and co-host, Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is podcast number 48. Yes, 48. We've been here for a little while now, folks. Thank you all for your continued support and thank you all for your generous feedback of Twin Peaks 47. We had lots and lots of conversations around spread betting. As you will all know, that Pete had a good chat in our last podcast about that. We're going to do some more coverage of that today. And Pete's also had some questions from one of our listeners around some areas of that. And we've got a few other things we're going to cover as well. And I'm also going to talk about the charity shortly as well as to how that's going. Pete, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, all right. I mean, you know, the usual problem that's been going on for about 6 months where I'm desperately waiting for the hospital to get in touch with me. But it is what it is. It's frustrating. It hurts. And I'm sort of fed up with it. But, you know, we carry on, mate, don't we?
We do carry on, Pete. But I think my concern is, you know, and we've spoken about this in another previous podcast, you know, in connection with yourself and others, is that there is, and there continues to be an issue around the NHS and other people falling through the gaps that ordinarily would have ordinarily had a good service previously. Yeah. And you're one of those people. So, you know, I keep urging you to just push back and just kick off, really, to try and get the help more immediately, you know, because they will just go, you know what, we'll get to him and keep prioritising everything else.
I think a lot of the problem is that because I'm very specific that I want to go to Stoke Mandeville Hospital because it's a specialist spinal unit. Yeah. I think if I just like went down the road to like my local hospital, they'd let me in. But the problem is, if they need to do anything on me, they're going to end up giving me more problems. They don't know how to deal with spinal injury. So, you know, it's a frustrating situation. It really is.
Okie dokie, mate. Well, all I know is that lots of people love you, mate, and lots of people care, and
we've been
having our conversations almost every other day about this now. So, you know, and the other people are showing you lots of love on Twitter and across social media. So, guys, ladies, gents, keep showing Pete the love, and one day he'll be able to tell you that, you know, he's actually been dealt with by the NHS. You know, so let's keep our fingers crossed. He might get a bit like when you had the jab, Pete, and they come knocking on your door. Remember?
Yeah, total shock. Yeah,
the shock to you knocking on the door is like, "Hello, we're here. We're here to do you." You know.
Who are you two?
So that might well happen, mate. That might well happen.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Right, Pete, let's just start really with a bit of a chat on the markets, which has been up and down. And we talked last time, we'd hit the 7,000 mark. And then we had the bank holiday, you know, long weekend. We opened the markets on Tuesday. The markets opened quite well. And midday on Tuesday, they hit 7,000 again, 7,034 we hit midday. And then the US markets just did not play ball. You know, the NASDAQ, I think, hit their sixth, if I got this right, I think it's the sixth day that it hit consistently, traded lower. And even before, obviously, the markets closed in the US, the FTSE 100 closed at... from 7,034, it went to a low of 6,912 and closed at 6,923, minus 43 on Tuesday. And it was noticeable, Pete, that on Tuesday night, we're recording this, folks, on Wednesday the 5th of May, and it's now 6:23. It was notable, Pete, on Tuesday night on Twitter, it was very quiet. There wasn't anyone talking about their losing stocks or stocks that were down 5% or 10% or whatever. It's very quiet. It was like tumbleweed. Very quiet. Not a lot of people conversing about their stocks because the vast majority of people's stocks were down. And the people that were talking about the stocks that had gone up and done well, they weren't really being championed or celebrated or anything like that. Yeah. Bizarrely, you know, today the markets have done really, really well. Yeah. The FTSE's up, closed up 1.68%, Pete, 116 points, and
huge
closed
jump
at 7,039, and that's our highest close for some significant time. So I think we might see a bit more action on social media on this Wednesday, the 5th.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking, funny enough, I don't normally do this when we're recording the podcast. That's why I've been a bit quiet. I've actually got my tablet in front of me, and I'm using SharePad on my tablet. And just looking now at it, I mean, the action today, really huge up candle on the FTSE 100. And it's on a daily RSI of something like RSI 64. It can go quite a bit higher off of that. So it really wouldn't surprise me if in the next few days we see more gains on the FTSE 100. And I noticed that some of the banks, like I hold HSBA and I hold Stan, Standard Chartered and HSBC, both of those, you know, really powering today. And the other thing I noticed was that mining, I've got Glencore, GLEN, and that was, you know, strongly up today as well. But there was a lot down, you know, it was quite mixed, you know, even though these ones were really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned, I'm not sure if it was the last podcast or the podcast before, I'm holding Rio Tinto as one of my commodity plays, and that was up plus 4% today. So yeah, that would have been a good driver and help to markets as well. So it's been very, very positive on the markets. But like you say, it depends on what you were holding, really, doesn't it, today?
I think it does. I think it's one of those days where a lot of people might have had quite a flat day, you know, even though it was so strong. Interesting on those ones. I mean, I hold HSBA and I hold Stan, and I'm still pretty happy with those. And I think they're probably going to go higher. But I've got Glencore, and I think I've mentioned before to you on a podcast, I'm really in two minds about it, and I keep looking at other miners. I was really looking at Anglo American the other day, AAL, and I was sort of thinking, do I switch to that? Because what I don't like about Glencore is, even though it's got good exposure to some of the future metals, like nickels and whatever, it's got like old-fashioned, horrible thermal coal, quite a lot of it. And the other thing I don't like is all the sort of corruption and the, you know, the sort of ongoing governance issues that surround it. And I sort of think, I'm not sure I really want to be in it when there's probably other things I could be in that might be better for me. So,
yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about it, obviously today, AAL is up 6%, Pete. BHP is up 4%, Rio Tinto 4%, Glencore 4%. They've done quite well, and you mentioned the banks. The interesting thing about Glencore, Pete, is that I think at some point they will consider the coal assets and either try and spin it off into a separate entity or try and sell it off full stop. And as with all mining stocks now, they're looking at what are going to be the future drivers. They're talking about commodities super cycle, and coal is not part of that super cycle, Pete. So, you know, you're looking at the iron ore, you look at the aluminium, you're looking at lithium, you're looking at nickel, you know, and so on and so forth. So if they can get rid of the coal assets, which I think they probably will do at some point, you've got less debt, and you've got a company that's really, really be able to increase its margins and increase its rates. So it's a consideration, Pete, but I'd watch out if there's news as to them getting rid of or assets, you know, stripping out some of the stuff they don't need anymore or don't want anymore, that are not, to use the word non-core to Glencore.
That's very good. No, it's weird because I've often thought about the funds as well, like the, what is it, BlackRock, World Mining and things like that. You know, I've just got this ongoing sort of battle with Glencore, and at the moment, because it just keeps nudging up with everything else, I haven't been desperately active to try and do something about it. But I've just got a very open mind and looking at all the different options and thinking, well, would they be better than Glencore? I mean, the advantage that Glencore has got is that perhaps it's been left behind a bit because people do worry about these sort of like governance issues and stuff, you know.
Yeah, that could be something. It does create a bit of drag. As I said to you in the last podcast, if there's litigation or any sort of issues, I tend to just frown upon that and move on, Pete. We've each got to make our own minds up as to what we'll deal with. I mean, I was under the impression that most of the litigation stuff regarding Glencore was behind it regarding the most recent events, but there's always the opportunity for more stuff to come. I mean, the stuff ongoing now and probably going to be going on for a little while with Rio Tinto, to be fair. You know,
I think this is the problem. I think all of the big diversified miners, they're almost like accidents waiting to happen. And in some ways, having like, you know, BlackRock World Mining, is it BRWM, something like that?
Yeah.
Having BlackRock World Mining might sort of reduce that risk and still give you pretty good upside, I would imagine.
Yeah, and give you exposure to some other commodities as well and other, you know.
BRWM. I mean, that wasn't so strong. That was up 1.7 today. Yeah. So it lagged the others. So, you know, it's a tough call. Mate, a quick question for you.
Yeah.
I was thinking about yesterday, right? Because yesterday was quite a down day and a bit rubbishy, yeah? So that was Tuesday the 4th of May, just after the bank holiday. But the thing I noticed was that even though it was a bit rubbishy, a load of, probably when I look at my own portfolio, I had a load of stocks down, right?
Yeah.
Probably had half that amount up, right? So what I'm saying is that, you know, it wasn't all one-way traffic. There was a lot down, but there was a little bit up. Now, I was thinking to when the market has really big, nasty sell-offs. And something that might be true, and I just wonder what your thoughts were, you know, when we get these really big, nasty sell-offs that lead to something bigger, you know, that become a 10% drop or whatever, I wonder if on those days when those sort of nasty things are happening, I think we find that nearly everything falls. You look at your portfolio, everything's falling. You might have one or two up if you're lucky, you know, but just everything's full. Everything is correlated together. No matter what it is, it falls. And everyone's thinking the same way. They're just thinking, I've got to get out. It's like in a normal sort of healthy market, people are thinking different ways. So yesterday, some people were thinking, oh, I've got to sell. But other people were thinking, well, actually, I'm going to buy. So there was still this difference of opinion. And I think it's when everyone's thinking the same and everyone's going, right, I'm just going to sell, that you get the really big problems.
Yeah, I agreed. I think what happens, Pete, a lot of it is mainly due to liquidity crunches. Yeah, you get a situation where there's a domino effect. So the large caps get sold off, they then move to the mid caps and then the small caps and so on and so forth, get all the way down to the micro nano caps of AIM. And so on and so forth, and it's just that wave of, oh my gosh, you know, you see those things on CNBC and Bloomberg when it's like everything's just red, and everyone's thinking, if everything's red, I've got to get out of it. It's only going to get worse, and the panic ensues. You know, it becomes almost a consensus. You know, so you know the thing to do often is to have a price point regarding each and every single stock that you've got in your portfolio and be looking at when those moves happen. To prepare for those moves and see, you know, if that stock gets to being further down from this price point, 5% or 7%, I want to sell it. But don't ordinarily have to follow everybody else. You have to think independently. And equally, if you do that sometimes, Pete, you can able to get ahead of those big market down days by just tracking the stock down and think, you know what, okay, I'm out of that. Or if your stock has met a target, don't get too greedy and sell it anyway before these things happen. I think yesterday, primarily, Pete, was because of the conversations around inflation and interest rates, you know, potentially inflation going up, interest rates going up. And that obviously impacts tech-related stocks. And if the NASDAQ loaded tech stocks, yeah, loaded with tech stocks starts to drift down. It impacts more tech-related stocks, but it also impacts other stocks that are exposed to the UK, US markets because of interest rates and because of inflation. Because one of the things people have to consider going forward is the stocks that they hold, yeah? What's happened to that supply chain? Yeah, not only because of Brexit and all the rest of it and COVID yep. being impacted, but what's happening to the supply train because of, because of the supply chain, because of inflation. Those yep. costs are going to start impacting some of the companies that you hold. So start looking into what's impacted the inflation of my company. Yeah, because at some point there might be a price point that hits and you get a profit warning because a company comes out and says, actually, we've projected all these sales and the sales have arrived, but inflation's eaten into that. So we've missed our targets. Yeah.
Hmm.
So that's what was happening yesterday. But you're right. It doesn't always impact all of the stocks, Pete. So you have to be mindful. You've got stocks that are just listed in the UK and are generating all their income and the supply chains mainly in the UK. Even some of those will be impacted, Pete, by inflation. So it's not just about overseas inflation impacting these stocks.
Well, it comes back to what we were just saying about the miners, that if the miners are doing well because the commodity prices are high and possibly yes. going to rise more, that adds to the cost push inflation. What I was sort of thinking was, I just wonder if there's more of a signal in those down days than perhaps I've thought about, particularly in the past. I mean, a lot of the times in the past, I've gone by a sort of gut feel that, you know, you often sense when these big sell-offs are coming because, you know, the whole lot, the news starts going a bit negative on stuff and you get these down days and you just sense that something's wrong.
What I use on those sort of days that I'm worried about the market is I'm looking at my portfolio, all the stocks in my portfolio, and I'm looking at what is the volume change on each and every single one of those losing stocks.
Okay, so you're looking for big volume.
I'm looking at big volume. I'm looking yeah. at the 90-day average, what my volume is on that. And I'm looking at how far ahead is the volume on that particular stock. Yeah, is it up 20%? Is it up 30%? Is it doubled the volume on that losing day? Mm-hmm. And if it's more than usually about 30% volume and it's down significantly, the next day I'm thinking, you know what, I might just have to get rid of this. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I won't do that, Pete, with my conviction stocks that I'm happy to hold for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. I'm happy to just say, you know what, fine, you know what, I'll ride this out for the next 3 or 4 years, as I've been doing with the AstraZeneca stuff that's been sold off of late. I'll just ride it out because I've got that conviction and I want to hold this stock for 3 or 4 or 5 years. Yeah. I'm not going to just chop it for the next 10% downward move and then try and buy it back into it. I'll just let it come down and buy some more. You know, that's just my strategy. It doesn't appeal to everybody, but that's just my strategy with the ones that I want to hold for 3, 4, 5 years going ahead, especially if the tech stocks.
Well, that's absolutely, you know, consistent with my thinking that I continually say it. My biggest mistake in the past is selling good stocks too early. And I'm really breaking that habit. I'm just letting stuff run. And I would far rather hedge my portfolio when there's trouble ahead than to sell my positions that are great stocks and then you forget to go back into them or yeah. whatever.
The difficulty, Pete, is that you, me and countless others, we've all got this story to tell about 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 stocks that in the past 5, 10 years that we've sold and have all gone yeah. on to do extremely well, but we'd loathe to buy them back because the share price is above where we sold them at X, Y and Z ago.
Yeah.
There are people who haven't bought stocks back that they sold last March and April, and they're 15, 20, 30, 100% higher, and they will not go and buy them back. So they keep ranting on about, oh, my ex holding, because they won't go back and buy it. You know, and I'm the same. I'm exactly the same. I'm like, nah, I can't buy it.
It's difficult psychology, isn't it?
It's difficult psychology. This is what I keep banging on about, mastering our own psychology. We've all got to learn. We've all got to get better at it. And none of us are faultless, Pete.
It's like you've got to sort of approach it in a really objective, rational, robotic way, as if you've never held it before, you know, and reassess it with that completely wiped brain that sort of forgets that you held it 2 years ago at half the price. And you've got to think, well, look, is this a good stock? Is this going to go higher? Is this a decent valuation? Blah, blah, blah.
It's hard, Pete. I keep banging on about psychology, Pete, and until each and every one of us gets better at it, we'll keep selling stocks too early.
Oh, God.
And we'll keep hanging on to stocks far too long, and then they go down 10, 20, 30%, and going, oh, I wish I'd sold it higher.
Oh, totally. You know,
so we can all get better at it.
The reason I wasn't too worried yesterday was because, you know, every weekend... Well, every night I'm looking at the index charts, but every weekend when I do a blog and I look at the charts for the major indexes, and it was so obvious, and I wrote about this in the blog, so it's there, you can read it, that, you know, so many of them had got really toppy with daily RSIs, weekly RSIs, that were well up into the overbought levels. And that was telling us that some sort of pullback, some sort of consolidation was needed. It doesn't mean you have to have a massive drop, but it just means that, you know, the markets might need to go sideways for a bit, or down and sideways or whatever, just to unwind that overbought condition. And that's exactly what yesterday, I think, was part of that. And what the reason was, whether it was inflation or interest rates or because, I don't know, a Martian landed on Newfoundland or something. I don't know what the reason was, but whatever the reason was, the charts were telling us anyway that they needed to consolidate.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely, mate. And sometimes you've got to be patient with that as well, Pete, because the markets have to consolidate over every now and then. You know, some of the stuff that's been left behind, because we've been talking about value and growth stocks for a little while now, and, you know, a lot of the stocks that were left behind are now coming to their own.
Yeah.
You know, we need them, you know, like you spoke about the miners, you know, we need them to do what they need to do. You spoke about the banks, they're trying to get back in the groove as well. You know, and if we can get our pharma stocks to do well, we'll be absolutely fine. I mean, we've got a situation, Pete, where you spoke about the charts. We've technically got the gap up to February, I think it's February the 15th, 2020, yeah. Takes us to 7,400 there or thereabouts. So we've got a gap up to that level, Pete. Whether or not we can sustain a move, you know, towards that, that's our next point of resistance. First point of resistance, I think. And then after that, we're at 7,500. But what I need to people to go back and have a really good think about is the levels we were at when we hit sub 5,000 back in March of last year. So we have come up a good 20-odd% from there for the FTSE, and we know what the FTSE is like. It travels, it comes down fast, but it doesn't go up very, you know, it doesn't go up very fast. But we have done quite well since that drop. Of over, sorry, I said 20%, didn't I? It's nearly 40%, really.
Yeah, it's more than that.
Nearly 40% since last March. So that's a significant move for a toy-toys index, really.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the the roadmap from where we are here, the all-time high on the FTSE 100 is just a shade over 7.9, I think, 7.904 or something silly like that.
Mm-hmm.
But between where we are now, just over 7,000, what was it, 7,039 or something, between there and that 7,900, there's like just a big splodge of resistance from the past, really. And I think it's just one of these wading through treacle things, where my hunch is that it will actually get a long way up into that in time. It won't go there straight away, and it like I say, I'm a bit worried about the autumn. I think, you know, we could have a sort of sideways consolidate-y kind of summer and then have a bit of a drop in the autumn. But that would then set up the winter for a nice strong rally, I would imagine. But I think, you know, generally I'm very happy to be pretty much 100% long equities.
Okay. Well, I'm heading to higher, Pete. In a sense of, as I said to you before, I'm moving up the food chain, so I've sold a few stocks and I'm trying to get not fully invested, but I'm trying to get to at least 95% invested, and then I'm just going to leave the markets and leave stocks alone, other than the stocks that you know cause me problems, I'll get rid of. So that's what I'm looking at between now and the summer, so I can get back to to live in and enjoying a bit of time. And they're going to lift the restrictions, aren't they? I think it's around the 15th of this month, 20th of this month, 17th, sorry. And we've also got a bank holiday coming in towards the end of May. So I'm going to be out and about visiting my folks and seeing my pals and doing all the rest of it, Pete. So, yeah, get the right stocks, leave them alone and enjoy life.
Let's hope the weather's a bit better for the bank.
I hope it is, Pete. Going back to your mining stocks, Pete, I'm just going to give you some numbers here.
Yeah.
You mentioned Glencore.
Yeah.
I don't know how long you've had it, so I'm going to use these.
Sorry? I've had it for ages, mate.
And I'll use a 10-year annualized. A five-year annualized for Glencore, 18.36. That includes share price going up and dividends. So that's 18.36, okay?
Yeah.
So that's very good, really, for compounding. 3-year annualized, minus 3.45. Yeah. In the last year, Glencore is up 118%, Pete.
Whoa.
Right? Right, let me give you Anglo-American. Same stats here, Pete. 5-year annualized, 39.45, so much higher than Glencore's.
A lot better, yeah, a lot better. Yeah.
3-year annualized, again, much better, 23.71%. Yeah, over the past year, after the bounce, 132.5%.
Similar.
Yeah, so you mentioned BlackRock, World Mining. Let's have a look at those. 5-year annualized total, 28.7%.
Pretty good.
Pretty good for a fund. 3-year annualized, 24.3%. Still very good.
Yeah.
For a fund. 1 year, 112%. That's a fund, Pete.
It's there or thereabouts, isn't it?
So you know what? You've got a choice of three there, mate. You know.
Yeah.
All good. I mean, obviously, things could change. It's had a massive bounce over the past year, all three of them, as Rio as well. But there's your choice, mate. You can either diversify into a fund and sleep easy, not worrying about one hit from, you know, the company of choice, or you go down the route of diversifying. Mm. You know, what we're looking at here, the yield on the BlackRock is 3.21 at present.
Yeah.
Anglo-American. The yield on that at present is 2.38, so a bit lower. Glencore is 1.46.
They're historic yields, aren't they?
They're historic yields, yeah.
Yeah, I think the forecast yields are probably quite a different picture, because I think the miners tend to sort of have good forward yields at the moment.
There you go, mate. You've got a choice. Pete, I'm going to quickly touch on what's been happening with the charity.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. First and foremost, ladies and gents, I want to thank you all for your kindness. We have, on average, 2,500 people listening to these podcasts, which come out twice weekly. And we were asking was for you guys, if you could afford it, to donate a pound or a fiver or 5 euros or whatever it is, to get help us raise some money for disabled children for the Memphis charity. And we started that a good few podcasts ago. And you guys, ladies, have been exceptional. But I want to use this occasion to speak about one individual, which, you know, people that don't know me won't know this, but I'm all about kindness. And it's very rare that, having been the person that gives out and gives stuff and do all this sort of stuff freely for the community and charities and all the rest of it, that somebody else does something indirectly or directly to me that gets me emotional because of their kindness. Mm. But that's exactly what a chap called Elric has done. And you can find Elric on Twitter at Lemming Investor, and that's at L-E-M-M-I-G Investor. And I'm going to cut this story short and just tell you the numbers. This person runs a website and a blog, and he writes articles and so on and so forth. And he's basically gets people to pay him subscriptions and all the rest of it. And he's basically donated X amount of subs to us, to the charity. And over the past week, X amount of days, Elric has gone beyond belief, really. I'm not sure. I think this charity must have touched him in some way, or he's just, you know, whatever. But he's donated £412 to this charity. So I just wanted to give at Leamington Investor a big shout out, and I'm going to be speaking to him again over the next few days because of what he's done for this charity. We're sitting at a total at the moment of £2,190.80. Our initial target, obviously, is £2,500. We're going to look to smash that because we're going to run this until December, and hopefully then come December the charity can do what they want with that money and help all these young people, these children and their carers. But we're looking to smash that target. So once again, I'll appeal to your sensibilities and ask you just to consider making a donation of a couple of pounds or a couple of euros or whatever to help us towards that target. Okay. If we exclude all the donations that that Elric has made, we've had 54 people 53 of our listeners have made donations so far. So any of you that haven't made a donation so far, please consider making a donation. I really, really appreciate it. And thanks again to at Leaming Investor. Stone Circles made a donation as well. Tim Mullock made a donation, and others have as well. So thank you ever, ever so much. Really, really appreciate it. And thank you for your kindness.
It's fantastic. I mean, if you want to get to the charity easily, if you go onto my website, onto WD2, there's a page called Twin Pete's Investing Podcast. At the top of that page, there's a link, and you can just click through.
Brilliant. So on the Just Giving page, it's justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPete'sChallenge, and you can find us there and make a donation directly to that charity fundraising that we're doing.
Pete,
do you want to head off now and start talking in phase 3? We talked phase 2 on the spread betting, which had fantastic feedback.
Yeah, let's talk about spread betting. So in TPI 47, the last podcast, I sort of did introductory sort of thing to it, to have the weird way that I do it. So basically, in essence, I have my normal share portfolio. Then I sort of replicate that portfolio as a sort of mirror using spread bets. Yeah. So whereas most people have, say, 2 or 3 or 4 spread bet positions, I've probably got 30 or 40 spread bet positions. And I basically just run it like a mirror portfolio. So anyway, so I gave the example in TPI 47 of having an imaginary sort of £100,000 exposure spread bet portfolio. So that's the idea that if you buy £100,000 of normal shares, right, you need £100,000, right? But if you buy 100,000 shares using spread bet exposure, what it means is that you probably need, I find, you probably need about 20% of that as deposits. So you'd need £20,000 to support the 100,000 position in terms of the margin deposit, yeah? If you were to buy smaller companies, you would probably need £25,000. It would be 25%. But with me, it tends to be about 20. It's a mix. What I would do for that kind of number is I would then, so I've got £100,000, £20,000 is my margin. I would then have at least £10,000 in cash, which I call my cash buffer, which sits in my spread betting portfolio. Yeah. So that means that if I've got £100,000 of exposure and say it drops by 5%, then that would obviously knock £5,000 off, wouldn't it? And it, the 100,000 would now be worth 95, yeah?
Yes, I get that.
So what would happen in practice is that 5,000 quid effectively gets knocked off of your buffer, your cash buffer. So instead of having 20,000 margin and 10,000 of cash buffer, your cash buffer would actually drop to about 5,000 and your margin would actually reduce a bit as well. So the problem starts, if you've got £100,000 and it drops 10%, so that's £10,000 gone, you'll then find that your cash buffer is pretty much almost wiped out, and you're then getting very near to your margin deposit. And if you carry on like that, then the spread betting company is going to ring you and do a margin call. So what I do is I've actually got, like I say, I would have, say 10,000 quid cash buffer just sat in my account, which in normal days works absolutely fine. You know, that's plenty. But what I would do then is I would have at least another 10 parked somewhere else that I get to quickly in case I need to put it in to fund a big drawdown on the portfolio. So basically what I'm saying is that the way I tend to run things, if I had £100,000 worth of exposure, I could survive a drop quite easily of 20%. Yeah, the market, my portfolio could fall 20%, which is quite a big drop when you think about it. And I would have the cash resources to support that position. Yeah. Now, then you get to this complication. What happens if it falls 40%? Yeah, obviously you're then going to have problems, aren't you? And this is where the experience and the knowledge comes in. So what you would do in those instances, you've got several options. Obviously, if you can get more cash, so say, for instance, it's fallen 20%, so it's down 20 grand, yeah? And your cash has been pretty much used up. If it then falls to 30%, you're going to have to find another 10,000 quid. Or your alternative is that you can close some positions. Because every time you close a position, that reduces your exposure risk to the long side, but it also frees up margin capital, so that increases your cash. Right now what I do, this is part of the reason I'm so obsessed with hedging, is that by using hedges, what would happen is, say for instance the market fell 5%, so I was down 5,000 quid on my exposure, and I'm thinking, this don't look too good, you know, things are going to get a bit rocky here. What I do is then I do a short position on an index, so that as the long portfolio of shares falls, my short position on my index rises and it offsets the damage. I mean, it takes time and experience to get that working, but that's the essence of it. So if I was someone who was going to start out on this kind of process, what I would do is start off small. You know, just go like, just create yourself like a 25, 30,000 pound exposure portfolio. And again, the maths are the same. You know, if you've got a 30,000 pound long exposure, which is the same as having 30,000 pounds of shares, you would need about 20% as your deposit, which would be 6 grand. You'd probably need 10% as your normal everyday running buffer, which is 3,000. And it's good to have like 3,000 somewhere else that you can get hold of quick and whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that make sense? I know that's a bit numbery.
No, it was fine, Pete. I think what I'd like to ask you is, you know, or from my experience, just talk about some of the important rules of investing, because I think you touched on it last time that people don't really look at spread betting as investing, and they should look at their spread betting account almost as similar as they do with their investing account. And to me, it's very important with spread betting to have some rules. And I just need to stress on my part that I don't think that spread betting is easy. Now, the rules
that I have,
it's not easy. So some of the rules that I've always had, Pete, and please add to these when I've finished or interject if you want, is to cut losses early. Yeah, don't let them get bigger and bigger and bigger and think this is going to bounce back, because sometimes they don't. If it's especially from a profit warning and things just get worse, or if there's litigation, limit position size or get your position size correct. Have a plan and stick to it. Avoid over trading.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're mirroring your portfolio, then this one may maybe not apply. Diversify your portfolio. That may not apply because you're just mirroring what you've got in your portfolio of your investing account. Most importantly, I think most people, maybe you're similar to this, Pete. I with all my investing, I use a mix of fundamental and technical analysis. I think that's even more important when you're trading spread betting. I'm not sure what your thoughts are on that. And make sure you've got stop losses in place, either moving or otherwise, stop losses or guaranteed stop losses if you can afford to pay the premium. And if you've been doing it long enough, keep refining what's been working for you. Don't keep jumping and changing to a different strategy because that hasn't worked for you. Refine and refine and refine the strategy that has worked for you.
Yeah, I mean, what I would simplistically say, right, is whatever you do with your normal shares, so if you use stop losses in your normal shares, or if you don't use stop losses in your normal shares, whatever your standard approach is, just do the same with the spread bets. It really is. I mean, it sounds, I don't want to say it's that simple, but it is that simple, right? Just, and where people go wrong is this thing that they're normally a long-term investor, and they're a very good long-term investor, and they're making consistent returns, 10% every year, 15% every year. They're very good at it. And then they think to themselves or whatever, they go, right, I'm going to go and do spread betting. And for some reason, everything they've learned for years and they've got really good at and really practiced at, they throw it out the window and start doing something completely different that they actually know nothing about and is actually a completely different art. And I think that's where it all falls apart. In terms of the mirroring, it's not as easy as it sounds. So, for instance, I've got, say, 40 stocks in my WD-40 portfolio, my main portfolio, right? Now, the problem you'll find is that out of those 40 stocks, there might be as many as 10 that you cannot mirror effectively. And that is because some smaller companies, the spread bet companies, won't let you, you know, have a position on. Some of them, the spreads are really wide. And you just think, oh, I don't want to do that because the spread's really wide. What I tend to do there is I will quite often buy more shares of a smaller company rather than having a mirror as a spread bet. So I get extra exposure by having more shares of it, whereas normally I would have a certain amount of normal shares and a certain bit of spread bet exposure. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense. So there's these little nuances, but the thing is, I think the point is that if you have 40 stocks and okay, there's 10 of them you can't replicate or mirror, it doesn't really matter. If you're still doing 30 stocks as mirrors, you're still doing quite a good replication.
Okay. Would you consider then, I've got a few more points I want to make about that. Yeah. With regards to the not being able to use some stocks because they're not available or the spread's too wide, would you consider then maybe a sector spread bet, i.e. a tech or a pharma or a mining thing to cover things that weren't available? Or would you try to do something regarding a particular, indices instead to try and get that mirror? Or would you just ignore it?
You could do. I mean, I think what I tend to do is I ignore it, you know.
Oh, okay.
But I think that's an interesting idea. I've never really thought about it before. I mean, I guess the problem with an index, if you were using a sector bet or an index bet as a replacement, you might struggle to get your exposure small enough.
Because they're
big numbers.
Yeah. I use the sector idea in a sense of if there was three or four stocks that were mining or three or four stocks that were tech, yeah, and you found the spread too wide. That's why I was thinking it in that sense, if you know what I mean.
No, it would work. I mean, I have actually done it myself, or I have in the past actually had a long tech sector bet, and that does work. And I've done it the other way. I've actually shorted them, which can work. What I was going to say, so I talked there about what happens when things go wrong. Yeah?
Yeah. I need to interrupt you there, because the thing I want to touch on with this, Pete, it's important that people are realistic, yeah, and not unrealistic, and they should expect losses, Pete. Even the greatest investors have losses, so they've got to be careful with this. And then you look at the database for all the stats out there will tell you that most platforms, whether it's 70% or 80% of clients, lose money trading financial markets using leverage. So prepare yourself that some of the bets or the trades that you put on spread betting will incur a loss. You know, these big behemoths are built on clients' losses. They're not built on you ladies and gents winning. Yeah?
Because we're back to that classic thing. The reason that 70-80%, whatever it is, or more of people lose on spread bets is because they are this thing that they suddenly all become traders.
Yeah.
And they're not it's the same old story. You have to take a longer term approach of it. If you're just chopping in and chopping out, you will end up losing money, just like you will with normal shares. If you just keep chopping in, chopping out, it's very hard to do it well. So if you take a longer term view and hold your positions, then you've got much more chance to make money. But you must have quality stocks. You can't do it with a load of junk. Yeah. It just isn't going to work.
It goes back to the like you say with investing, Pete, it's about being disciplined. You've got to be disciplined.
Yeah. So what I wanted to say was I talked about what happens if things go bad. Let me just say what happens if things go right. So say, for instance, you've got a portfolio of 100,000 quid and the market, say your portfolio goes up 10%. What actually happens there is that your cash buffer, which I said before was £10,000, would now probably go up to, say, £18,000. So you'd get £8,000 would be profit, effectively cash, that's added to your cash buffer. So you've now got £18,000 there. But what would happen is that you'd find your margin, which was 20, would now probably go up to 22. And the reason is because if you make £10,000 of profit because your portfolio has gone up, what's actually happened is that the value of your exposure has gone up 10,000. Yeah. So 2,000 of it is the same. It's that 20% for margin. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. But the beauty is with that, see, what I would do then is it's like, oh, that's nice. You know, I've got this extra cash in my buffer. It's now gone up to 18,000. What I would probably do, though, is take a couple of thousand out. But don't take loads out because your exposure's increased. And something I want to say is really important. You must have a limit. So if you start off with £100,000 of exposure and you can cope with that, no problem at all. You've got the cash. You've got your strategy right, whatever. Have a limit. So if it gets to, say, 120,000, your exposure, you then say, right, I'm not going to let it go over 120,000. So you start selling some positions or reducing the size of some positions. Yeah. And of course, when you sell them, when you reduce the size, that actually gives you more cash as well.
Okay. Now, Pete, we've had some questions from somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Who doesn't mind us shouting out his name. Di Edwards, and you've essentially...
He's in North Korea.
Yeah, I mean, it's like this email. Hi, Pete, really enjoyed the show and listen regularly. I think I might be your only listener in South Korea.
Oh, South Korea. Oh,
South Korea.
That's not so bad.
The last episode where you talked about financial betting, spread betting, was particularly interesting. I have a few questions that I would be grateful if you'd answer either by email or on the show. We've covered question one. The question two is, how far out do you go with your spread bets, i.e. 1 year or more, e.g. December expiry when you start in January? What's the answer to that one quickly, Pete?
Right. What I've found is that, I mean, really, you can use any, yeah? And what you need to do is you need to, I use IG Index myself. In IG Index, there's a setting, which is a global setting, which is called automatically roll over. So you need your positions to automatically roll over. So it means that once, so say you had it on a 3 month contract, which was say, let's say it's till August, the end of August or something. If you're on an end of August contract, you want that to automatically roll to an end of October contract or whatever it is, yeah?
Yeah.
And so you can use DFB, which is a daily funded bet. Now, the problem with DFBs is they're actually more expensive. Over a year, if you use DFBs, you'll find the interest charge is slightly, is quite a bit higher than if you use the longest quarterly bet. So whenever I open one, I go for the longest quarterly bet, and the interest charge and all that is all built into that price. So you just put it on and away you go and just leave it. And because you've got the automatic rollover, if you end up holding it 5 years, it just keeps rolling over. There's nothing to worry about.
Cool. Okay. Next question, Pete. How do you manage your risks and do you use stop losses?
Well, it's back to what I said before. Just do the same as you would do on normal shares. So me personally, I don't use stop losses. But if you're someone who uses stop losses, just do the same as you normally do.
Okie dokie. If you close out one bet because you've been stopped out, do you open another position in something else to attempt to manage the risk and rebalance the portfolio?
Well, I think again, it just, you know, if you use stop losses, you just do what you normally do. So if you add a stop loss on a spread bet, you would likely have the stop loss on the share position as well. So I guess once it hits a stop loss, your shares will be sold, your spread bet will be sold, you then don't have a position in it. Then it's up to you if you buy another stock and you do a mirrored position, you know, going forwards.
Okie dokie. All right. And lastly, I think you've already touched on this already. Yep. How many positions would you recommend? But he's asking it in a slightly different way. How many positions would you recommend for a balanced spread betting investment portfolio?
That's a good question, actually. I would say you don't want to go too low. So I would say probably 15 is about the lowest you'd want to have. If you start going much lower, you start to increase your risk a lot. And the other problem is if you have less than 15 positions, you know, long positions, if you have less, what will happen is that if you tried to hedge it at all using an index, you'd find it completely didn't match. You need to get, if you're ever going to use hedging in the future, you need to get to a situation where your hedging shorts on your indexes match quite well with your longs on your portfolio. So that's something to bear in mind.
Okie dokie. I think there's one question I would ask Pete as well, with regards to the spread betting side of it.
Yeah.
Is with regards to newbies, and my concern obviously is that I'm trying
don't
to just
do it.
You already know the answer to the question. Yeah. I've not even posed yet. No, but I'll ask it in a slightly different way. If you are considering spread betting, and I'm there cautioning people not to. But if you are considering it, what's the best advice you could give to somebody if they're determined to do some spread betting, Pete, that you've not touched on yet? They're starting out very new. They haven't got a portfolio that they're trying to mirror, blah, 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 blah.
I think what I would say is start off doing normal shares and get yourself 3, 4, 5 years under your belt of consistently making money in normal shares. And once you're at that sort of position, then do it as mirrored spread bets. If you're not going to listen to that and you're going to go straight into it, then do your spread bet portfolio, but understand your exposure because that is critical. It can run away. You know, you think to yourself, oh, yeah, I've only got £20,000 worth of long exposure. Before you know it, you've got £50,000 because you just keep opening new bets. This is one of the dangers. What happens is, you know, the example I gave where you've got, say, £10,000 in your free float cash and you do well and that increases to 18. The temptation is to open more long bets and to use that 8,000 of capital as margin to support more exposure. It's the worst thing you can do because you're just digging yourself into a bigger and bigger hole.
Good advice. Good advice, Pete.
So I would say, again, you know, just stick to the basics. Don't become a short-term trader. Think long-term. Have a portfolio of 15 stocks. If you don't want to have a huge amount of exposure, do say £2,000 in each. 15 stocks. That's £30,000 long exposure, which would need about £6,000 or maybe 7 or 8 as the margin deposit, and it would need sort of £3,000. As the cash you keep in your buffer and have another 3,000, 4,000 parked somewhere else that you can get to quickly if you need to.
Cool. That's great advice, mate. Thank you for that.
Hopefully
that answers your questions there, Di. Do email us again if you've got any other questions. And equally, folks, if you've got any more questions for Pete or I, just give us an email or send us a DM.
Yeah, whatever. Cool. Cheers, Di. Thanks for those questions. A couple of quick ones. Spread bets are suboptimal. And what I mean by that is that forgetting the advantages of leverage and the advantages that it throws off cash and all the rest of it that I talked about, you might actually be better off using CFDs, contracts for difference.
Well, let's not even go there.
Well, the beauty with contracts for difference is they're the same as the underlying share price and you pay an interest charge. So they actually work out cheaper. The problem with them is that they are taxable. They have capital gains tax and their income tax. And I think there might even be dividend tax. Whereas with spread bets, they're completely tax-free, which is a massive beauty of them. The second thing I wanted to say was that what could be a good way of doing it is you have, like, say, a normal... Say you've got £10,000 worth of normal shares, right? When you open the £10,000 of normal share position, do, say, £5,000, half that, as your spread bet mirror. You know, have a structure, something like that. I find that works quite well.
Okie dokie. Pete, I think we might have to have another session at some point on this.
Yeah,
I'm not sure you've covered everything you wanted to cover yet. But
I think
given
we're
the feedback
there.
Given the feedback we've got from the first one, I think we'll see how the feedback goes with this second one.
Yeah.
And gauge it accordingly as to coming back to it. What do you think?
No, brilliant. And if we get some questions or whatever on emails,
yeah,
we can again bring them up on the podcast just so
absolutely
everyone gets the benefit. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, we want to talk about some stocks, folks, some of them that are of interest to the markets and some of the stuff that we hold or don't hold. We don't tend to talk about our stocks on this podcast, but I want to talk about a few because I'm going forward, because I just want to get them out of the way so I can just not talk about any of my stocks and just focus on the markets going forward. And first and foremost, I want to talk about a stock that I held up until tomorrow, and that was ITV. And ITV shares, I sold yesterday at just over or just under £1.24. I'd purchased them at 58 pence in July of last year, the 30th of July. And I previously trimmed on the 4-year results at 125. And on that tranche, it generated 116% on the first tranche when I sold it back in on the 9th of March, and I've waited until the Q1 results, or just before the Q1 results, and those Q1 results were today. I sold yesterday just under 124, and that generated a return of more than 113% profit.
Lovely.
So the total investment return for all of the two tranches that I sold was 114, more than 114 and a half. And the reason why I sold it, and I'm explaining this, is I was concerned about the advertising revenue, ad tech revenue and streaming revenue, and ITV came out today with their Q1 results, and they had seen actually a really, really good revenue surge for ads in May, and they're looking at good stuff towards June and so on and so forth. And the share price, I think it closed up 2% from yesterday's close.
Yeah.
So I just want to wish anybody that's holding, I closed up 2.5% at 124, and the market was very, very pleased with the outcomes this morning. So showing a bit of growth in the first quarter, and a rebound in the advertising market, and ITV studio revenues was up 9% as well, while media and entertainment revenue was down 3%. But overall, advertising revenue is key here, and it looks like it's going to have a good summer going forward. So I just want to wish everybody well. I'm not going to buy back into that stock for the time being. I'm going to look elsewhere, but very, very well done to those that held on and continue to hold.
Yeah, I'm just looking at SharePad on my tablet, and I notice it's got forecast PE of 11.8, and it's got a 2-year forecast PE of 10.4, with a forecast dividend yield of 4.1, and then a 2-year forecast yield of 4.5. Now, judging by what I read of the trading update, which sort of read all right, and bearing in mind we're in a recovery situation coming out of recession, I think if I was holding it, I think I'd probably keep holding it. But then I always hold everything, don't I? I never sell anything. So
you do. I think the thing with me, Pete, was I wasn't.
You sold before the result, so
I sold yesterday.
You
I
were
sold
being careful, and I think
I was being careful with it. I mean, we'd got the 52 low. Is I think it's sub 50p, or 54p is a 52-week low, but March low was lower than that. And I just thought, it's up 100-odd% since the lows of last year. If the market doesn't like what it's saying tomorrow, it's going to get hit by 5 or 10%. If the ad revenue is poor, it's going to get smashed. And I thought one of the positives could be, we're doing so well that we're going to introduce a dividend. in a half yearly, and they didn't say that today, as far as I read anyway. So the markets was it went up and it went down today, and it closed up. It's closed strongly actually into the close. It went down to went to 123 at one stage early this morning, just after 8 o'clock, and it touched the high of the day almost on the close of 127.45. So really good move in the afternoon. I mean, some of that was helped by the whole of the market going up, but I think generally, Pete, I think they did really, really well under difficult circumstances, and if they can do that in difficult circumstances, and things are opening up, and we've got the Euros and other stuff going on, and might even get Love Island, getting some ad revenue. So
yeah, they
might help them in the next quarter and the next half. So who knows? Might be talking about this next year, and it's £2 a share. Who knows?
Yeah, they said about it in the update. It said Love Island's coming out. What's that other one? Oh, the Euros, yeah?
Yeah, the Euros. Football, Pete, not the coin, yeah?
Yeah.
Not the currency.
Mate, shall I just bung one in quickly?
Bang one in there, mate. Go on.
Just a quickie. This is actually one I hold.
Yeah.
This is DGOC, Diversified Gas and Oil Company. I've held it for probably 3 or 4 years. And in that time, it's been quite good. And the reason I'm talking about it here is that something really significant happened last week. And I'm not sure if people really took on board what it means. What it is, DGOC have been, up until now, their strategy has been to buy sort of like old-fashioned, boring, conventional, mainly natural gas, but also some oil wells. And they buy like these nodding donkeys, yeah? You see Dallas or something, mm-hmm. and, with JR stood in front of a nodding donkey, the sort of thing.
Yes.
But like I say, most of it is natural gas. But they've been buying these at really incredibly attractive prices, because basically the big oil majors who are selling them these rubbishy old nodding donkeys that only produce a thimbleful of oil, a bucket of oil a day, it's hardly worth bothering with, the people who sell those to DGOC aren't interested in the conventional stuff. They're after the shale and the fracking and the stuff underneath. DGOC, up until now, have only operated in that sort of Appalachian region. Yeah, well, I don't really know America. I have no idea where it is. But they've operated in this particular region. What has now happened is they've just bought some oil and gas wells in more the sort of Texas, North Carolina, that a completely different region, a long way away from it, completely different region. But what they're going to do is replicate the same strategy where they buy up all these different assets, these conventional assets. And we're talking like 6,000 wells. We're not talking like one or two things. We're talking huge amounts. They'll buy up all these wells and stuff, and they'll use common infrastructure. And they're very good at running the wells efficiently. And the beauty is that DGOC hedges its revenues. So irrespective of what the oil price does or the gas price does, it tends to hedge out 85-90% of its production. And what that means is that it can cover its interest payments because it's got a bit of debt, but it can also pay massive dividends. So it is actually forecasted to pay 9.6% dividend yield. So even if the shares do nothing, you're pretty highly likely going to pick up 9.6%, which isn't a bad return just for sitting on a stock for a year.
Absolutely, mate. That's pretty incredible in the sense of we're always talking about compounding dividends and all the rest of it. So if you can get that and some incremental capital gains, that's not bad at all, Pete, to compound that up going forward. What sort of return has it been given over the past 2 or 3 years it's been listed, Pete?
Well, I don't know the exact return, but But I mean, the dividends have been big the whole time. I mean, I remember when I first bought it, it was still paying like 6-7% dividend then. So I've, in the 3 years, whatever, I've probably picked up 30% or whatever of my initial investment. I've probably got back 30% just in the dividends.
Okay. I'm just going to pull up the data here, mate. 1 second.
Yeah, see if you got it there.
Right. Let's use it, go up to the five again. I'm not sure if it's been around 5 years. So three-year total returns, capital gains and dividends, 17.5%, Pete. So that's quite handy for something that's meant to be in your portfolio sleeping away to compound that. You know what I mean? You're looking at just under 5 years, it's going to be doubling in your portfolio, you know? So that's not too bad, is it?
I mean, the other thing that's worth knowing is that they've got a company, I think it's called Oak Hill Management. It might be Oak Tree Management. I think it's Oak Hill Management. Yeah. That has basically done a sort of arrangement with them where they give the funding for more acquisitions.
Yeah.
And DGOST still benefit from it. There was some issues in the recent past about decommissioning costs, but DGOC have put arrangements in place with the sort of local sheriff or the county whatever it's called, and they've got agreements with them and stuff for how many wells they close down each year and what the they've established the cost of closing down these wells and stuff. So I just don't see it as a problem.
Okay, Doc. I mean, the past year, total returns 35.1%. I'm looking at the dividend structure here. It's due to pay a dividend. It's going to go ex-dividend on the 27th of this month for 2.89p. And it's already 2.89p.
Yeah, that might be cents.
Cents, sorry. And 2.87 due to go ex-dividend in September, 2nd of September. But 35% in the last year, Pete. So it's done a bit of a bounce from its lows. So that's really, really good. I want to go on the completely different spectrum here, Pete.
Yeah.
And I'm sharing this with people just to make them be aware of it. And just to watch out and not to get caught up in the hype and the conspiracy and all the rest of it. But we've had lots of talk in the past about Bitcoin, which is a cryptocurrency. The current hot thing that's being talked about used to be called and parodied as the Dodgy Coin. It's called the Doggy Coin or the Dodge or the Doge Coin. It's D-O-G-E Coin. Pronounce it as you wish. And it's a cryptocurrency created by software engineers Billy Marcus and Jackson Palmer, and they created that and released it in December 2013, and it's been up and it's been down and so on and so on and so forth. There's currently around 127 billion coins in circulation. It's up something ridiculous percentage wise. I think it's 1100%, I think, Pete.
Yeah.
Of late.
Wow.
The bizarre thing, the reason why I'm talking about this is because I read something somewhere, and it bizarrely touches on you talking about your mining stocks, Pete, which I didn't really know about at the time. The market cap of all these coins at present is 85 billion, there or thereabouts, give or take a billion, right?
Yeah.
And that, Pete, is the combined market cap of Newmont Mining and Barrick Mining, two of the behemoths of the mining industry.
Oh, yeah.
By this obscure coin that's now the third biggest coin or the fourth biggest coin that's out there. And people are just jumping all over this particular thing. And it's one of them things where the fear of missing out is going to grip some people, and they're going to see some people that we think on Twitter are quite, you know, straight-laced sort of people talking about this particular coin. It's one of them things again that's just caught everybody off guard, and people are thinking, I need to get involved. Just tread very, very carefully, folks. The Doge coin or the Doggy coin or whatever you want to pronounce it called, just be very careful and mindful that this is coming a very, very long way. It's up 11,000% in a very, very short space of time. Just be mindful that if something changes overnight, you could, the speed that it's gone up, it could come down again. I'm just bringing it out there just to caution people, really. About that,
I mean, I just find the whole crypto thing absolutely bonkers. So, to me, it's It's outside my sphere of understanding, so I just don't have anything to do with it. It's just, yeah. Mate, just quick couple of things. I've got another stock to mention very fast, but a couple of quick things. There's all sorts of platforms where you can listen to our podcast, your Apples, your Audio Booms, your Spotify, Googles, whatever. You can probably subscribe. So you've got like a button and you hit subscribe. It doesn't cost you anything. And you'll then get alerts and things, and it will tell you there's a new podcast come out. Quite often the podcasts come out before we actually publicise them, so just worth knowing. The other thing, we've got a deal with a fantastic sponsor, ShareSco ShareScope. We've got an arrangement with them where basically if you go onto their website and where it says subscribe and stuff, it's got like a promo code box. And if you type Twin Peaks into that box, then you'll get a 3 months worth of data added on. The stock I wanted to mention was FDM. Do you know that one, Pete?
I didn't hear you, Pete. Sorry, say again.
Sorry, FDM. I don't know if it has a name, but I think it's just FDM. And FDM is a sort of strange sort of recruitment firm. But what they do is they take people, right, and they get this person, and they train them in IT and tech. And what they do is they become a Mountie. So you become a Mountie for FDM. So it's like a sort of, and then as a Mountie, you get sent out to work in various companies that need IT experts, whatever, yeah? So it's basically like a recruitment firm. So I mentioned, I think in the last podcast, and I've certainly mentioned it on Twitter and whatever, that it struck me that recruitment was an area that's sort of like been left behind a bit. And looking at FDM, which is sort of unusual because it's a different sort of recruitment company, I still think there could be quite a bit of upside. And it's got a forward expected dividend of over 4%. So it might be worth looking at. I don't really know a huge amount about it. Might be complete rubbish, but have a look if you like it. You know, whatever, up to you.
Yeah, I think we spoke about recruitment companies before, and we did touch on, I think it was the one S3, the STEM, the one with the symbols STEM.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Saying that, you know, given what's going on, that going forward, there's going to be a huge need for tech related individuals. So if their Mounties are tech related individuals, I agree with you that they could do exceptionally well going forward, Pete. So yeah, it's definitely one to consider. And you know what, Pete? I'm seeing articles about there's a shortage of workers going forward of all kinds of highly skilled jobs because a lot of people are saying to their companies, actually, I don't want to go back to work full time. I don't want to go back to the office 5 days a week. So there's going to be a shortfall of various jobs going forward. Sorry, of skilled workers, and there's going to be opportunity for these recruitment companies to fill the gap with new people going into the jobs.
Absolutely.
So it's definitely something to consider, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's quite a funny one because I remember it from years ago. I literally remember it from 20 years ago. And I used to think, God, what a load of garbage this is. I don't know why, I just didn't like it. But as time's gone on, I've started to appreciate it.
Good. Right.
Time for a joke, mate.
No jokes this week,
no,
mate.
I'm getting
no, absolutely not. I'm going to talk right? about a stock.
What do you call a horse with three legs?
I don't know.
Donkey.
Oh my gosh, Pete.
Right, that's it, mate.
Some people are going to like that.
That's
yeah,
your 3-year-old.
Some people are going to like that, to be fair. It's not a bad one. It's probably one of your best so far, mate, to be fair.
Probably is.
I think you might, let's just say you might have peaked, yeah?
No.
I'm going to talk about a stock now. This is SIG PLC. It's a British-based international supplier of insulation, roofing, commercial interiors, and specialist construction products. And I purchased this stock last September, quietly, as I always do, did my research. It was down there. No one liked it. No one was interested in it. No one was talking about it. I purchased it just over 24 pence. Today they came out with some news which the market liked, and the share price closed up 6% at 50.35 pence. So that's another one I'm gonna basically reveal to you guys right now. It's basically saying that they're encouraged with the start of the year, Pete, a return to growth, because I'm always looking for recovery stocks, you know, in the sense of what you could do. And this was just a construction related one, which I thought, you know what, we were talking about all these other stuff, Pete. Remember we were talking about Volution and all these other things and all the other stocks that were doing well? And I was thinking, right, okay, if everyone's doing all this stuff and the construction's doing well, this could do okay in time. So it's a recovery stock. It's not quite there yet, but today's positive trading momentum update up to April, the market liked and it's up 6%. So that's just another one of the stocks. I'm not going to go into detail about it. I don't want to ramp anything to anybody. Just something for people to investigate and consider going forward. And with all my stocks, I prefer for you not to buy my stocks. Let them just leave them alone and let them do the thing. And, you know, when they're in the dark, they do well. When everyone's talking about them, they tend not to. So, you know, there you go. That's SIG is the ticker symbol for that stock.
So it's SHI, isn't it?
Yeah.
SHI, yeah.
Is the ticker symbol. And so SHI is a company.
No, the other way around.
Sorry, you've got me. This is that time of day. My brain simply doesn't work. Ticker symbol is SHI and the company's called SIG PLC.
Yeah.
Get me words right. See, if I do it like that, no one will buy it, so that'll be great for me.
Mate, they'll be like, people will be listening to this thinking, well, these people don't know what they're talking about. I don't know about that. I have to say, it's a really good looking chart.
Well, it's just recovered, Pete, from the lows. Nobody wanted it. Everything was being sold off last year. And I prefer to do my buying when people are selling. I don't like buying stocks when they're at 52-week highs and so on and so on and so on and so forth. I like to go in there, and if I do the research and it bodes well, I want to buy it down there. We'll see what happens over the next couple of months and couple of years. I'm hoping that they'll get back to the dividend paying list as well, and if and when that happens, because they can lower their debt and all the rest of it, we'll see. I've got some others to disclose, which I'll do another time. There's another stock I wanted to disclose to share with people, but we probably haven't got time for that one, so I'll share that another time, Pete, because we're 76 minutes in, mate.
Can I just mention very quickly on SHI, because it's really important. If you look at the chart, right, from where you are now, around 50p, there's basically no resistance up till 90. It could go from 50 to 90 quite, you know, I'm not saying knife through butter, but there's basically no resistance. And that's because it fell from 90 back in the, you know, the big sell-off in 2020. It just fell like a stone. So there is no natural resistance points.
Yeah, I would caveat it, Pete, with the fact that they've got to get rid of some, the burden with a little bit of debt. They're looking to sort themselves out on that front. But they're making the right moves, Pete. It's one of them things where, you know, at the time when I was buying it, so you've got to pinch your nose, mate, you know. So you've got to be very, 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 very careful.
Yeah. Sorry,
let me caveat that. They've got negligible debt, and they should be debt-free at some point this year, if not. I have to go back and check it because I didn't really have time today. I've been running around like an idiot. The debt might well be clear. I'll have to go back.
Well, it's like anything we mention on these podcasts. We just throw the ideas out. If people want to pursue them, it's up to them. But they must do their own research and look into these things properly.
Absolutely. I mean, we've had some great feedback. Some of the stocks we've mentioned in the past have done exceptionally well. And reason why we mention them is for you, ladies and gents, to go away and research them. You know, the stocks that we're just talking about that we don't hold, go away and research them. Go away and research them. You know, some people found some gems and have generated 100, 120, 150% on since we've spoken about them. That just pleases our bones, you know, that people
do that. Yeah.
You know, because this is what it's all about. You know, we're just learning here. And we just like to share ideas so people can go away, research and prosper from them. You know, this is what it's about.
Too right.
Cool. Pete, is there anything you want to add? Because we've maxed out our time again.
Yeah, no, I think we're done now. Thank you for everybody for listening and thank you for you know, subscribing and thank you for the people who signed up to ShareSpot and thank you for charity and thank you and I'm all right. I'm not you know, I'm gonna be fine, but it's just, you know, just getting in the hospital and getting it sorted.
Cool. I want to say a big thank you to everybody, really, because the beauty of what we do is that you know, for all intents and purposes, some people love what we do and some people don't. So that, you know, we're the Marmite podcast, you might want to call us that. But the beauty of what we're doing is that we're doing all of this stuff unconditionally to you guys. We've got no agenda. We're trying to be as authentic as possible. We're not coming on here talking about stocks with someone else who said, oh, can you ramp this stock for me? We're not taking brown paper bags here, there, and everywhere. We're just doing things. We've got a sponsor, that's us done. And then we talk about stocks and we share ideas and we try and get people ready for what the markets might throw up. You know, we're trying to help you guys and ladies prepare. These things don't go up in a straight line, ladies and gents. There's going to be a time where that beloved stock of yours, you know, goes down 10, 15, 20%. So you have to prepare for that. You know, be mindful that whatever stock that you're in right now that's doing exceptionally well, that won't always be the case. So just think, prepare, get yourself ready. And if there's anything I can recommend, read, and read some more. And if you can get a book on psychology, read the book on psychology. You've had the Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger's roadshow virtually just this last weekend, or I'm losing track of the days now, the weekend before. What did these guys do? They spent all their time reading. They're in their 90s. You know, they're trying to improve and get better. And these are the best two of the top two investors of all time. They're still reading and learning in their 90s. Nice. So we can do some more as well.
Incredible.
All right, ladies and gents, that's it. That's the close of Twin Peaks Investing podcast number 48. Take care of yourselves. Do what you can in your communities. Do what you can for each other. Share some love on social media. Be kind and be considerate and thoughtful. And if you can, do something on Twitter and social media that actually makes somebody giggle and laugh rather than frown and be miserable. Share some happiness, folks. Yeah, and we're almost out of lockdown and I'm absolutely buzzing and looking forward to getting up and about and seeing my friends and family. So please take care of yourselves. Until next time, God bless.
See ya.
This Twin Peaks Investing podcast was brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.